that's going to require other countries in Europe and China to help Indians deal with what I think is just going to be a shocking death toll.
COVID aid rushes to India. It's Thursday, April 29th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Australia and China clash over Taiwan. China seeks coal alternatives. COVID disabilities risk. Recycling protective gear. Recycling at home. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Amid criticism that the United States' response to India's COVID-19 crisis has been slow, President Joe Biden says the United States is sending a whole range of critical assistance to India, which is overwhelmed with a deadly second wave of the coronavirus. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain has the story.
Funeral pyres are burning across India as close to 200,000 people have died from the coronavirus. In New Delhi, a parking lot was turned into a makeshift crematorium, with residents saying they have never witnessed such scenes. Families in hospitals like this one in Bareilly are arguing with nurses and doctors as their loved ones are dying due to a lack of oxygen. President Joe Biden said he spoke at length with Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi on Monday, and the U.S. is immediately sending a whole series of specific help that he needs.
We are sending the actual mechanical parts that are needed for the machinery they have to build a vaccine. We're also discussing, I've discussed with him, when we'll be able to send actual vaccines to India, which will be my intention to do.
Biden said the U.S. needs to quickly make sure that other vaccines, such as Novavax, are approved for use. And then it can share actual vaccines, as well as know-how, with other countries like India that so desperately need them. Defense Department spokesman John Kirby said the Pentagon is mobilizing.
The department is working closely with other U.S. agencies to rapidly deploy oxygen-related equipment, rapid testing kits, personal protective equipment, and other essential materials to our Indian partners.
Kirby said the U.S. will also provide India's frontline healthcare workers with support. With the dramatic surge of cases in India, human rights advocates say at their meeting next week, members of the World Trade Organization need to temporarily waive intellectual property rights in a bid to widen access to COVID-19 vaccines to more countries.
But the Biden administration is certainly in a position to say, you know what, this is a crisis. India has, 300,000 new infections per day. We are going to temporarily suspend our hold on this intellectual property and make sure that they can produce as many vaccines as possible.
Other experts say the crisis in India demands a global response, such as this medical aid arriving in India from Britain.
It's going to require other countries in Europe and China to help Indians deal with what I think is just going to be a shocking death toll from this rise of the numbers in the pandemic.
Analysts say the shocking images from India may stir a change in thinking about sharing vaccines and life-saving medications. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. India surpasses 200,000 COVID-19 deaths. A magnitude 6 earthquake struck India's northeastern state of Assam. No immediate reports of casualties. Experts say the christening of 3 warships by China tightens control in disputed sea and is a warning to the United States. Key diplomat says do not underestimate Afghan security forces. Samsung Electronics family will pay $10.8 billion in inheritance taxes, the largest paid in South Korean history. Expanded coverage of these stories and so much more can be found daily on Facebook at VOA Asia. We invite you to stop by the voanews.com website. We're just getting started with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. China has said Australia must abide by its One China policy after a senior government official in Canberra warned of conflict over Taiwanese independence. Under the policy, the Chinese Communist Party asserts sovereignty over Taiwan. Defense Minister Peter Dutton said a military confrontation involving China over Taiwan should not be discounted, but he has insisted Australia's focus remains on having good relations with Beijing. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Relations between Australia and China, its most valuable trading partner, are at their worst in decades. There have been trade and political tensions, as well as disagreements over human rights. Canberra's call last year for an inquiry into the origins of the coronavirus, which was first detected in China in 2019, offended Beijing. It interpreted Australia's demand as criticism of its handling of the pandemic. Bilateral ties have deteriorated ever since. There is now friction over Taiwan. It's seen by Beijing as a breakaway province that will eventually be reunified with the Chinese mainland under what it calls the One China policy. Australia doesn't recognise Taiwan as a sovereign state or regard the authorities in Taiwan as a national government. However, the United States has raised concerns about Chinese aggression towards Taiwan. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has asserted that Washington has a serious commitment to Taiwan being able to defend itself. When asked on national television, Australia's Defence Minister Peter Dutton wouldn't rule out a military confrontation.
I don't think it should be discounted. I think China has been very clear about the reunification, and that's been a long-held objective of theirs. And if you look at any of the rhetoric that's coming out of China from spokesmen, particularly in recent weeks and months, in response to different suggestions that have been made, they've been very clear about that goal.
In response, Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Wang Wenbin had this message for Canberra. Abiding by the One China principle is a prerequisite for China-Australia relations. Taiwan is an inalienable part of China's territory, and the Taiwan issue is purely China's internal affairs that involves China's core interests and allows no foreign interference. Last week, Australia abandoned deals made with the state of Victoria, linked to China's Belt and Road Initiative. Observers say the billions worth of infrastructure investment projected by the Chinese government aims to expand its global economy and influence. But the project has left some countries with significant debt. Officials in Canberra said it was protecting Australia's national interest. But the Chinese embassy in Australia called the move provocative. Analysts believe that Canberra is being punished for trying to stand up to China, which has imposed restrictions and tariffs on a range of Australian farming goods as well as coal. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, two plane loads of oxygen cylinders were sent Wednesday to India from Singapore as countries continue to send urgent medical aid to help India battle its deadliest coronavirus wave yet. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Climate change has become more of a priority among top leaders in the world. Emission gases are heating the planet. One of the main contributors is the burning of coal. And as we know, it's huge in Asia, China accounting for nearly 52% of the world's coal use. VOA's Adriana Zhang spoke with Jay Nakano, a senior fellow in the Energy Security and Climate Change Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Today, we present the final part of their conversation in an exploration of alternative energies for China.
Electrification trend warrants close attention. Even, you know, something like hydrogen. Hydrogen is considered to be one of the key tools or key ways to, you know, facilitate the decarbonization and energy transition. But that also has to come from somewhere. There are a lot of different types of sources and technologies that can go into generating hydrogen. And there's necessary, there's no guarantee that, all the, in the future under the name of energy transition, all the governments would commit to hydrogen generation only from renewables. Some governments, like European governments, especially EU, has definitely, expressed that they, that's the direction they want to take too. But I think in some of the countries, it's still not clear when they talk about, things like EV, EV deployment or hydrogen deployment, exactly where that, what's going to be going to the power as power sources.
China can't just rely on the governments. It also has to rely on carbon trade market and use market to reach the goal. Do you think that's true and why?
China has had, experiment and experience looking at the emissions trading for, quite a while, at least, in seven different, provinces. And then a couple of years ago, I think already probably 3 years ago or so, the national emissions trading, was launched. I think there's, continues to be probably greater discussion within China about how to price carbon than probably in the U.S. I mean, there has been, discussion within, United States, certainly within Washington too, but yeah, I think that may be something that they could explore, although exactly what, what makes best sense, given the way that their government is, structured, the relationship between market, markets and, I guess, their notion of, regulations and regulatory, body. I think, there seems to be, to the extent that I'm aware of, quite a bit of debate between Minister of Finance and DRC about, what works better for China. It's not something, quite frankly, I've had a chance to really look deeper into it, but I am aware that there, has been, on and off discussion, among policymakers as to what tool makes best sense. Maybe it would be, the Europeans have been proceeding with carbon pricing and emissions trading, perhaps the greater linkage, may help. But that alone, I don't think, there's really one silver bullet. I mean, I think both on the supply side and consumption side, there are multiple things that, China, needs to undertake in order to really, close that delta again, it's the, 2030, peak emissions level in 2060. It's, that could be piece of it, but I think it would also require massive deployment of, cleanly sourced, different types of clean technology, clean energy technologies.
Jay Nakano is a senior fellow in the Energy Security and Climate Change Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. She spoke with VOA's Adriana Jong. You may hear all the parts of the conversation on our Tuesday and Wednesday programs by visiting the VOA Asia page on our website, voanews.com.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. Thais living near the border with Myanmar said they remain scared following clashes between Myanmar's oldest rebel force and its military. You'll find this in all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Much more is to come on VOA Asia. Right now, around the world, more than 1 billion people live with some form of disability, and they are disproportionately at risk from the COVID-19 pandemic. VOA's Veronica Balderas-Iglesias tells us more.
Ellie Carney's loving bond with her Labrador retriever, Olive, has made the pandemic more bearable. Ellie is 27 and has a disability.
Ever since COVID, Olive has been spending time with me. Like, I'm not depressed anymore.
With professional help, Ellie has been living a mostly independent life for 3 years now. She's adjusted to the new normal, but her immune system is suppressed. So she's had to give up activities that might risk infection, says her mother.
When you have a disability, you really have to continue doing your independent living skills on a daily basis. And when COVID happened, Ellie did regress.
I miss my friends. I miss being active. And I miss bowling.
In this pandemic, people like Ellie face special risks. Their pre-existing health conditions make them vulnerable. They rely on others, and they are often forgotten.
And we all have needs. They're all things in life that are necessary for us, right? Food, shelter, clothing, in order to live a good quality of life. But people with disabilities have an extra set of needs. Each type of disability faces different types of barriers and supports.
At the Mary Marshall Assisted Living Residence, 70-year-old Muriel Chrysler gets government-funded care 24/7. Restrictions are gradually being loosened after a year of measures to prevent COVID outbreaks.
They've opened up the dining room once a week. They have opened up the community room. And people go in there and talk and, you know, do activities again.
While keeping the residents mostly isolated helped control infections, it took a psychological toll, says residence head Davina Alston.
70% of our residents are diagnosed with schizophrenia. Even though you can take medications, we saw an increase in residents having hallucinations and being depressed.
Advocates are documenting the problems both in the U.S. and around the world.
Persons with disabilities should be prioritized in accessing vaccination. So this, unfortunately, has not happened in most places of the world. Dependence on family members can cause and aggravate experiencing violence.
In the United States, some 61 million adults live with a disability. Many are in group living settings, and that has penalized them.
33% of the deaths have occurred in the congregate settings. It was completely predictable that these would be death traps for the seniors and people with disabilities. There was poor oversight. They knew that there was understaffing and inadequate training for the staff that was there.
The Biden administration has created a COVID-19 health equity task force to examine disparities in care.
The fact that we have physicians and nurses and psychologists and social workers who go through their credentialing process and don't really learn much about disability culture, disability etiquette, civil rights laws, accessibility is a problem because it affects the quality of the health care that people receive.
There's also a presidential proposal to spend $400 billion for more home or community-based care for people with disabilities. If Congress passes it, the support workers who help Ellie and her mom will get a raise.
The DSPs get paid anywhere from $13 to $14 an hour. We really have to increase that number so that they can work 40-hour weeks and live off their salaries.
Money is important, but Mrs. Chrysler believes more can be done to change the way people with disabilities are perceived and how they can succeed with just a little bit of help.
I'm as normal as any other person walking on the street. I have a mental illness. I take medication for it. It's treated. If I had two legs, I'd be living on the out there in the world.
Veronica Valderas Iglesias for VOA News, Washington.
Making headlines in Asia, Tokyo Olympics organizers and the International Olympic Committee pushed ahead with plans to open the postponed Tokyo Olympics in less than 3 months, unveiling the latest set of rules to show how the Games can be held during a pandemic. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, a company in Britain is giving new life to discarded personal protective equipment, or PPE, to help keep it out of landfills among the coronavirus pandemic. VOA's Arash Arabasadi digs into the story.
Six hospitals in Britain's National Health Service, or NHS, have new machines that turn used PPE into a goo destined for remanufacturing. The environment director at Thermal Compaction Group, Matthew Rapson, says the machines address a growing concern.
We have a number of trusts now using our machines, and specifically to take out the plastics and also the face masks, which has become a huge problem in the current pandemic.
Items like face masks, gowns, and curtains, essential in safeguarding frontline health workers, have created thousands of tons of waste. Instead of incinerating or just tossing those items into landfills, the Welsh company cooks them for about an hour, yielding a 20-kilogram block of reusable material. The Environmental Services Association's Stephen Freeland says Britain's waste problem is much bigger than PPE.
There has been an increase in PPE that we're all well aware about. But the system, the waste management system, has coped. It's a very resilient system. We are not talking about huge amount of volumes of material compared to the overall amount that we're handling for the UK as a whole in any given year.
According to government figures, Britain produces about 220 million metric tons of waste each year, so PPE is just a tiny fraction of that. Still, Thermal Compaction Group's plastic blocks are already in use to make items like toolboxes and school chairs. The company says 11 other NHS hospitals will receive the equipment, giving new life to plastics otherwise destined for the landfill. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
An innovative home recycling unit may revolutionize the world of recycling as we know it. Julie Tabo is here with more.
When people dutifully collect and toss their used containers in a recycling bin, they believe they're doing something noble, recycling. But that's not really what they're doing, says Aldous Hicks.
The whole society has been told that what you're doing is the recycling, and you don't. No one does any recycling. You collect it for recycling.
But Hicks hopes to change that. He and his team have developed a machine that will allow consumers to actually recycle in their own homes. The machine will sort and clean and then grind plastic, glass, and metal containers into material that can then be used to make new products.
You can recycle virtually any used material so long as you don't mix it together. And that's called closed loop recycling. So basically, this bottle or this container can be closed loop recycled back into that container.
A home recycling unit is one way of keeping our recyclable waste out of landfills, which is where 50% of it ends up, according to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. Another option has been to send it overseas. Many developing countries view it as a valuable commodity.
Less wealthy countries will pay for those recyclables. They will import them. And the reason they import them is because they want them as cheap raw materials to be made into other stuff. And so I don't look at it as a problem. I look at it as an opportunity. How do we get more raw materials out of your recycling bin so we don't have to get them out of the ground?
As the world's population continues to grow, so does the need to find more innovative ways to handle the waste we're leaving behind. Julie Tabo, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You may continue online with us as we're on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter 24 hours a day. Just look us up at VOA Asia. Thank you so much for joining us. Come back again at the same time tomorrow. We also thank our team that brings you this program, Managing Editor Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a terrific day ahead. Be safe. Be well.